Your host today is Dr. Rick Klofein. I'm always pleased to be host on our show. Usually I'm here with my co-host, Dr. Susan Kolb, and I'd like to thank Dr. Susan for her vision of maintaining the show and our practices. In Atlanta, we practice out of Millennium Healthcare and Plastico Surgery Center. Dr. Susan is a board-certified surgeon. I'm a board-certified gynecologist. We're both board-certified in holistic medicine and have a deep interest in the topics that we cover on our show. Interests that are beyond just professional interests, interests that are personal interests, and interests in the topics that make a difference in our life. That means we review topics such as medicine, including alternative medicine, new science, spiritual medicine. We're interested in new physics, new science. We're interested in healing, shamanism. We're interested in psychic phenomena. We're interested in a lot of different things. And carrying through on those interests, I'm very happy to have with us today on the show Keith Amber. Keith has written a book with his wife, Sharmai, called
Steps to Enlightenment.
Steps to Enlightenment, 12 Powerful Tools for Mastering Ourselves. As I read through this work, I see that, as I understand it to myself, that it's process work. It's process work that's very approachable, that gives you the tools, the very practical tools, step by step, to do work in your life to bring about a more, quote, enlightened, unquote, life. Keith has been on the spiritual path throughout his life. It looks from the reading that I've done, it's taken him down several different roads.
Yep.
For the last several decades, two or three decades, you've been working as a psychic healer. Is that correct?
Yeah, 37 years right now in May as a psychic soul healer professional.
Yes. So it's very interesting to have you on the show because while I know many people who are, quote, psychics or, quote, healers, I have few with your level of experience over decades to talk to. And so I find that very fascinating because there's many issues in your book that come up that I have a lot of interesting questions about. This is process work about enlightenment. Let's start, Keith, if we could, by defining for our audience what enlightenment is.
Well, we noticed that, there are some groups that you do certain practices and all of a sudden pop, you're in enlightenment. Well, we don't quite call it that way. You can have a pretty enlightened experience, but we're grounded in this, and we recommend that you walk a path that is ever more enlightened, which is basically an ever-upgrading of your daily lifestyle. You gain that by observing what works for you and what doesn't, what works in life, what seems true, what seems right, and prioritizing, like, this is better, that's not so good, so I'm going to do less of the stuff that's not so good, and I'm going to do more of the stuff that is good and right and seems to be true with life as I pay attention and take notes. And so it's an ever-upgrading of your lifestyle on all levels. Part of it's sexual, part of it's relationship, part of it's career, part of it's money, part of it's attitude, part of it's spiritual contact, part of it's developing to the point where you can actually contact and trust your either deeper core, we call it God self, your center, or your guides of life that are with you every second to help guide your way to perfect your life. It's walking those steps and getting better and better at it. That is where you start walking the steps to enlightenment.
So this is the process that we undergo throughout our life or lifetimes, as opposed to an end result or a place where we end up in.
That's right. You know, the sense of God to me is rather infinite. And I believe that there's an infinite path to challenge, to upgrading, to expanding, to enlightening, to having more of life thrive through us. whether we're human beings or we go on to maybe a person, you know, in another dimension, a human being that's just filled with light. You know, when I look at Jesus anymore, and my wife Charmaine's the same way, all we see is the form of Jesus with light. We don't see a person anymore. So, you know, I believe we just get filled with light more and more, and you get filled with light because you're in less, we'll call it sin or darkness or off balance that drags, and, you know, it densifies or condenses down to the flesh. Well, you get buzzing with the truth and with light more, and you start getting this glow, and, you know, you go on to other dimensions as you evolve, and you just get more and more filled with light and the essence of a highly refined light, your style, God's style in your soul. I mean, like what you're made to be. Like, essentially, I'm a healer and a few other things and a teacher, and that's just naturally what I am. So if I get really right with myself, I'll be glowing as a healer teacher. You might be glowing as a doctor or whatever, you know, your talents. They just keep growing as you keep following this path.
This sounds very much to me like going through my medical training. I was very much involved in my spiritual process before I ever entertained becoming a physician.
Yes.
And when I went through the process of becoming a physician, I realized that the paradigms that I wished to work in my medical life were not the paradigms I was being taught. The paradigms I was being taught were that the body was a machine and you could fix it, and ultimately it could be the perfect machine and you're done.
Yeah.
Doesn't work for me. The paradigms that work for me in healing, and I think it's what you're talking about in enlightenment, are garden paradigms. That our life is our garden, and if we want a beautiful garden that's fruitful and amazing and productive and lovely to be in, then we have to work at it each year, planting the discovering what the right plants are for our garden and how those plants should go together, spending time to weed year after year out what we don't want.
Mm-hmm.
If we do, anybody who does gardening knows that it makes it easier to garden each year when you do that. And it doesn't mean sometimes you're not going to have to do some major work and bring in a big backhoe to pull out a boulder so that you have more room to work.
Those are nice examples of, you know, just the common down-to-earth path. And, you know, there's a lot of people touting the quick way to God, the quick way to salvation, the quick way to enlightenment. I haven't seen a way besides your way that you just described of down-to-earth, day-to-day, raising your garden. And anyone who has raised a garden knows that you got to keep tending to it. If it needs fertilizer, it needs the weeds pulled, if it needs watering, you got to be there. And that's the same with our spiritual growth. You got to tend to it, and maybe one year a blight comes in or some bugs or whatever, and you got to shift a little bit and adapt to what is happening today that your garden needs your attention to, or your spiritual path, spiritual growth needs your attention to. And we find that the problems in our life are actually masks of the issues that our souls are supposed to be dealing with. So if you are honest with your problem, you know, it could be I'm jealous of this person, or I want to win all this. It could be greed, or it could be any kind of thing, low self-worth. If you're honest with it, you say, well, this is a problem in my soul, and it's here. You know, I'm in this earth school. It's not this earth picnic or paradise on earth. Go off in the sunset and everything's fine, but it's the earth school, and I'm here to learn something, and I have a problem, which is a mask to my issue. I have an issue underneath that's causing this problem to come in my life, and if I will go after this problem, unveil it, and deal with it, then I'm that one step closer to enlightenment and freedom. Freedom and the deal with freedom, the truth is the only thing that can set you free. The deal with that is you get empowered. And you get empowered to say, no, I'm not going to do that anymore. Yes, I'm going to do this. And you get closer to yourself, truer to yourself, closer to how you were designed to be. And, you know, it's not going to work out where you get all the best things if you actually don't follow how the Creator created us to be. There's a way to be for each one of us, and that's our path to enlightenment. So following that truth, that path, uncovering the veil that the problems in our life are trying to show us, that path will align us with the truth of how we are created and how we are designed, and that truth will set us free to be all that we can be.
So I think this, I agree with you very much that much of the problems that we face in our life is because we're disconnected from our true selves.
Yeah.
Disconnected by our experience in this physical body, disconnected by the conditioning of our family and our culture and our religion and all the things that influence us and help us form our attitudes and ideas,
yeah,
and disconnect us from the natural, the flow of the natural world, which I could also call the divine.
Yep.
And that much of the process that you're describing is little practical ways to go about becoming reconnected and coming into a space where we can more clearly hear the flow so that we know how to move forward.
Right. You know, I believe it sort of starts out, you know, a lot of us, we got problems. Little kids, this is a problem, that's a problem. And so you try to get it right. You try to figure out, how do I solve this? You know, what's the way? And if you'll stick with it, you can almost go to a quantum level of inner listening to your intuition. Because there's an inner intuition of your core self, your God self, and the guides of light around you that are trying to sort of get you going in the right direction. So if you'll not only try to do what's right, but also listen to how you're being guided what's right and best and true for you, and then keep following those steps, you can walk your way out of a lesser life, a lesser satisfaction, into more and more of your full potential. And, you know, it's everybody's choice and right, and complaining or blaming or anything, none of that gets you anywhere. But being honest and saying, wow, this problem keeps dogging me, I must have it, it must be something to do with me, find out where you're imbalanced with this, or not honest, or not clean, you're corrupt somehow, deal with it, and then you don't have this problem following you.
It seems that the more we're able to listen to that quiet, still voice inside, that true inner guidance,
yeah,
that the, in some ways life becomes easier. Because if we listen when we're getting a little tap on the shoulder about something, it's better than if we wait until the tap becomes a shove and then I'm convinced there's a divine 2x4 with my name written on it don't listen to, it comes out. So I want to get to the point where it's not just a tap on the shoulder, but I can hear it the way that the wind blows through the grasses in the field and the way that the trees look lace-like against the night sky and perceive it as subtle as that.
Yes. So, you know, this has to do with discernment and intuition, but I find the people that get the best discernment over years are those who are honest and those who will have quiet time, meditation time, those who are sincere, and those who are trying to do what's right. So there's three things to develop discernment or develop being in touch with yourself or your truth. One is meditation or quiet time. One is sincere earnestness in following truth, and also sincere earnestness in right action. So it's not enough just to find the truth if you don't harness your actions behind it.
Yes.
And those things, if you'll do those three things, truth and honesty, quiet time and meditation, and walking the talk, then your discernment. And that's one of the most desperate things that the world needs now in this chaotic, information age that we're in is discernment of what actually is true and what actually is right and what actually does work. If we'll follow these three things, right action, following the truth, and deeper silence and connection with your still, small center, then you can increase in your discernment. This discernment gets to where you make better financial decisions, relationship decisions, decisions in every phase of your life as you get more aligned with truth, yourself, quietness, and you walk the talk. And I'll tell you, you can have the first two of these without walking it, and you only develop so far in your discernment. Because I've seen this many times. I've taught classes and stuff, and if I'm not actually teaching the class, then my information slows way down. If I'm teaching classes, all of a sudden I get all these brilliant knowings. You can experiment them, you can watch them after years, and they all seem to be really accurate. Well, then information is not for me or for me to indulge in or for me to be all recognized in. It's for me to dispense to other people. And if I dispense it to other people from which it was actually given to me for, then I get more rich information and breakthrough concepts.
And it's a very different experience when you're teaching and you're in that space. It's very clear.
It's wonderful, yeah.
Yeah, it's a very clear thing. The three things that you voice in terms of developing discernment, something that I have found in my life, and I'd like your perspective on it, one thing that has been extremely helpful in reinforcing those three things for myself personally is spending time in nature.
Yep. Nature naturalizes you and gets your head straight, gets the cobwebs out, gets you right with life. And nature naturally does that. You don't have to add sugar or TV or some ingredient. Being in nature naturally naturalizes you, which takes the load off. And the more you have the load off and a naturalizing environment, the more you're going to sort of correct out and come around closer and closer to truth. Even if, like, say you're Einstein and getting these beyond this world kind of concepts, or whatever your talent is, you go in nature and it'll help you tap that closer because it's connected and unadulterated of the truths of life, which are the mysteries or the secrets, like what Einstein gets, or each in our field, we might be in the leading edge of the breakthroughs or just in our own little ahas. Nature enhances all of that.
Interesting that you spoke about discernment. So I have a confession to make. It's a confession to you because some of the listeners of this show know this. Dr.
Okay.
Susan is usually our co-host. Dr. Susan and I do the show quite often.
Yeah.
And we're very aligned spiritually. We've been doing the show for about 8 years on many different topics. And we come from two very different places.
Uh-huh.
When I read your book, one of the things that I greatly appreciated is that your book felt very grounded. Now, often, so I have no personal experience of past lives.
Mm-hmm.
I just haven't had any, and it's not that I haven't been in spaces to do that or
mm-hmm.
attempted to do that or whatever. It's just that I've honestly used my discernment, I feel, to be honest with myself,
yes.
that I haven't had that personal experience. Susan has many, many, many
mm-hmm.
experiences. So, of course, when I speak with people such as yourself and many other people I honor and respect greatly, whose much of their work is based around their personal experience and of past life experiences and pre-birth contracts and
yep.
so forth and so on. It's very interesting for me to feel how that feels to me.
Mm-hmm.
Because sometimes it feels for me that it's all too much up in the air and it's like their feet
yep.
aren't even on the ground. And it,
yep.
and you know, and then, of course, there's people that are too grounded.
That's
and
right.
or aren't, you know, but it's very much, or very often for me, it's like, and one thing that I appreciated when I read your book was that it still felt very grounded. that it was still very much about, that it was all about, regardless of the information, where it was coming from, it was all about what was playing out in our life now, right here and now.
Mm-hmm. Very, very nice. We confuse a lot of people because a lot of what we teach sounds New Age, but we are so compassionate and concerned to help others and to be right with truth and to actually be examples that solidly walk the talk and just don't have it blathering out both sides of our mouth, whether we know it or not, but it sure sounds pretty. So we're very concerned with this, and frankly, whether you have past lives or not that you know of, that means nothing to me. What matters is whatever is your walk of life. You're a gynecologist, are you?
Correct.
Okay, so that you have that thing aced and that you reasonably have your well-rounded way that you deal with life handled, to me, that's top. Everything else grows on that when needs be. To me, past lives are worthless unless, you know, like I've gone through 160 some of mine, but each one of them adjusted me so that I could be a better teacher, a better healer. If I didn't need those to adjust me, why should I waste the time? Why I don't need that information.
Thank you. Yes.
Yeah. And so it's a practical thing, and I want you to know something also, Dr. Rick, is some people try to open up past lives that just aren't right to open up. Some past lives are really corrupt, powerful, off-balance lives, and a person's not ready for that. They simply have not matured enough and gained their own power enough in the right direction to open up, we'll call it the monster of another lifetime kind of thing. And so you don't want to go messing with this stuff. The right way I've seen this is there's a natural, like, I'm starting to have these thoughts, and I'm starting to think I'm this princess of another age or this hunter or whatever. And if it naturally starts coming up, then it's the right time for you to deal with that past life. But by golly, it's not essential for your enlightenment to even know that you have past lives.
Thank you.
Not an issue.
Yeah, I had a feeling that would be the response I would get from you, having read your book and
mm-hmm.
other information on you. But I think it's a very important point, because sometimes it sets people apart.
Yeah.
And I've had people all over me about this, but of course, just so happens I don't care, because I know what my experience is.
Right.
And I think also, I think you make a good point about collecting experiences.
Yeah.
Collecting, there are many people I know who collect experiences. They
right.
may be past life experiences that they collect. They have a whole bunch of them. They might be other spiritual experiences they collect, experiences from going through many different spiritual systems or spiritual paths or spiritual teachers.
Mm-hmm.
Or they might collect experiences with sacred plant medicines or whatever they're into. And what they're doing is collecting experiences. I'm more interested in how your experience manifests in your life.
Uh-huh.
And if the experience is a positive and good experience, then how it becomes part of your being.
Right.
And changes you in a way that makes a difference every day.
Mm-hmm. So I think the basis of this, Dr. Rick, is your sincere effort and intent, the sincerity of what are you actually looking for, and will you actually qualify the truth, or do you hear something that strokes my ego, or I really like wearing this idea of myself, but it actually isn't the truth, or it isn't actually healthy or right, but your sincere intent, your sincere search, and your sincere effort to adjust yourself to what's right, I think that's what makes the most out of your experiences, and actually, as you gain momentum, starts drawing the experiences you have of more of the nature that you're going after. And that's what you're looking for, is a better and better path. Well, it happens by better and better intentions, better and better choices, better and better follow-throughs, and then you get better and better path, experience, and enlightenment day after day. It grows.
This is Temple of Health Radio Show. We're speaking with Keith Amber about his work and his book, Steps to Enlightenment, 12 Powerful Tools for Mastering Ourselves. We're going to take a break and be back shortly.
You there?
Yes. I'm not sure they took us to break.
Okay.
So I guess we'll continue until we know that happens.
Yes. I would like to just say my business now is on the phone, and we do all kinds of psychic work, healing work, help people get information that is pertinent to their lives. And this path started for me because basically I couldn't stand the pain in this world, and I just was bothered, like, why isn't somebody doing better with this? And so I began to pursue what I'm supposed to do, what is the nature of God, what does God want us to do, what's going on, and then eventually developed into where I began to contact what's in people's souls and higher guides of light. And,
question, Keith?
Yes.
Was that when you were a massage therapist that you started making that contact?
Well, at 9 years old, all of a sudden I got real guilty. Like, gosh, I'm just a spoiled, selfish kid. It's all me. And right there is where every day since then, I'm almost 60 years old. Every day since 9 years old, somewhere in there, I have been pursuing a better walk and a better perception of what's going on in my life. And then as I became a masseur, real quickly, there was an unusual gift in me. I knew things, and
people
would go, I've never experienced anything like this. What are you doing?
Yeah.
And I didn't know at first, but I did it with all my heart, and then all these gifts started coming.
The reason I ask is that I'm an osteopathic physician. I've been using hands-on healing, osteopathic manipulative therapy throughout my career as an obstetrician gynecologist. And it was a very powerful learning experience for me that opened up all sorts of inner doors when I started touching people with the intent of helping them.
Nice.
It was very, very powerful, powerful work that I knew I was meant to do. That's why I chose to become an osteopathic physician, because I knew I would be trained in that way. And I was curious because when I read your bio, it sounded like that when you started doing your massage therapy work, that it just sort of like took off your psychic abilities.
Yeah, you gave the ingredients. It's such simple ingredients and so profound. You touch with the intent to help and heal.
Yes.
And just with that, not just one day, but days and years of that.
Yes.
All kinds of things start developing
yes.
that no books are going to teach you.
Right.
And that's beautiful. Such a simple thing you said there, and yet so much magic for anyone in any direction. Let's say you would like to make good food for people, and you just have this knack with food. If you'll do it and want to make this really good, healthy, tasty food for people, you'll become a great chef that will do a lot of good in the world. Just following that simple formula, touching it, working with it, and you want to really make good stuff, you want to really help people have better health kind of thing.
I found that when I started to utilize body work in my practice on a regular basis as a physician, it just opened up spaces between myself and my patients that I never saw in my medical training.
Wow. Great.
And was just a really, really, really wonderful gift to me to fall into a medical tradition that I would be trained in those methods.
So you bring both ends of the deal. You bring a touch of a deeper dimension, because the touch will give you a deeper dimension, and then you give the fine training as a doctor combo.
Well, I've been practicing in Atlanta for 20 years. For the first dozen years I practiced full obstetrics and gynecology. I've always been a holistic physician. I was an organic farmer for 5 years as a young man, long before I ever thought about becoming a physician. Was rooted. I had my first healing herb garden in 1970.
Wow.
And, you know, have been rooted in that all through my medical training.
Mm-hmm.
So it's it developed in an interesting way that I'm very thankful for.
Wow, you make me crave a doctor like you in my world. I'm over here in Hawaii, and I'll tell you, you're the kind of doctor I'd go to. It's just, you make me crave that. By the way, do you tell people diet or herbs sometime that they
can
use? Oh,
yeah, so I'm a holistic physician. So women, 8 years ago, I stopped delivering babies.
Uh-huh.
I stopped doing surgery, and I stopped practicing hospital medicine. So for those last 8 years, I've been with Millennium Healthcare, which is our group holistic practice in Atlanta.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so the bulk of my practice now are the same peers I've always taken care of. When they were having when I was having babies in my life, my own personal children, I was delivering their babies. I'm 56 now, so the bulk of my practice are women in the 50s, 40s, 50s, and 60s experiencing menopause.
Yeah.
They seek me out to take care of these issues because I can provide them with a multitude of options. Because when we take care of people, the best thing is to have a multitude of options so that you have options that resonate with that individual.
Yeah.
That they feel good about, and they feel, yes, this is good for me. So, yes, I can offer people conventional medicine in that context, though most people that come to me aren't looking for that, but I prescribe medication and do office procedures and order things when necessary, refer for surgery. I also provide a bioidentical hormone replacement therapy, and I offer completely drug-free options using herbs and supplements and, you know, lots of different things that people, that women can benefit from to support them, to try to draw a plan of action that they can sit with and say, yeah, this feels good to me.
Yeah. You know, I find that it's not just the regular physicians, the doctors that what they teach you in school and doctors, or it's not just the alternative or I'm a healer or psychic. It's the blend of all of this and using what applies best for each person, what's most comfortable for them. That's what we're looking for. And Mary and my wife here, Charmaine, you know, I was trained in naturopath things and I've been a healer, and many, I think this was what our guides did just to set work on me, but I couldn't do many of the foods and herbs and different things. They work completely different with her than with most people. So I had to learn to, instead of being pig-headed and said, no, we're doing this, this is the way that works, and I had to listen to what worked for her.
Yes.
And doing that, then we coexist very well, and, you know, I learn quite a bit more about a different person and a different system than what I was used to.
And you learned because it was different, and you learned because you were willing to move away from dogma.
Yeah.
That this is the way we have to do it.
Yeah.
And realizing that there's lots to do it. I think this whole movement of integrative medicine and complementary medicine, holistic medicine, the whole movement of traditional medical practices out of their traditional containers and moving throughout the world into the West, such as traditional Chinese medicine, Ayurvedic medicine, is all very interesting. This merging of medicines that's starting to happen and that is building, is a snowball that's going to build, is very important, because I see ultimately it's about, one way we might look at it is merging the medicine of the mind with the medicine of the heart.
Mm-hmm.
Because so many indigenous and nature-based systems and shamanic practices are heart medicine that are very powerful.
Uh-huh.
We in the West have a very long leg of science and mind. And many systems have a very long leg of spirit and heart and a short leg of science and mind. We're both limping.
Yeah.
And due to the changes that have occurred in our modern world with the diffusion of information,
mm-hmm.
you know, eventually these medicines are going to merge. Yeah, it's not always perfect because traditional Chinese medicine is so wonderful.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's from traditional China. And the container of America doesn't always hold it that great.
Yep, that's right.
You know,
go ahead.
And these medicines tend to move from sacred space to a profane space when they move into America in the West.
Yes.
So that traditional Chinese medicine, which is such an amazing, amazing complete system, turns into your internist who took an acupuncture course for 20 hours.
Right.
Who knows a couple points to stick a needle. You know, and it's profane in this way. And so I think eventually what's happening is these medicines of the heart and mind are going to merge and new containers are going to be created to hold this.
You know, this reminds me of mixtures of all things like, let's say we're doing good farming, but they know of using a certain bacteria in India that really makes radishes grow better, and bringing it over and using it here. It could be in farming, it could be in medicine, and in my past, like, when I was in high school, I made myself read the Bible an hour a day. Just, you know, that wasn't how I was raised or anything, but I just wanted to know what was true. In college, I started praying a day, and I didn't read the Bible as much. And then later on, I started meditating, which is an Eastern thing, to take me into deeper silence, doing breath techniques and yoga and that kind of thing. And all this time trying to walk the talk, but ever more profoundly walking the talk more perfectly so that I'm a in-touch, red-blooded, very present person. At the same time, I'm sort of in a trance state, in touch with way finer dimensions, and also bound by many of the principles in the Bible or in different scriptures or truth books, truth ideas. And all of those sort of married together as a very functional way to walk through life, really connected. And so this brings the East, the West, and different techniques in instead of just one system. And this happens to people, or there's many of us, millions, because you want more. Bible did a certain amount, but prayer launched that further. Bible and prayer did a certain amount, but meditation launched it further. Bible, prayer, and meditation did a certain amount, but walking the talk more profoundly walked it even further. And so because I was really looking for it, and it could be a different combination for different people, but the thing is you're looking for truth, you're looking for where you fit in your life and what's right with life, and you keep walking that talk no matter what the obstacles are. And keep in mind that obstacles sometimes are saying, you know, you're not quite doing this right, you need to shift this way or that way. For instance, I had the Bible and prayer really well, I was really good in massage, but I was stressed out, so I needed to learn to breathe and to meditate and to get in touch with it like a no-brain instead of pistons driving and going forward with ambition, and then that rounded out my life way better. So for all of us, be open-minded for whatever is truth. You never know from what corner it's going to come from. You know, some people think that the traditional medicine is just gross and they have it all judged, but I'm telling you, you break a leg and you want it.
Absolutely.
So we don't want to exclusive out anything. We want to bring in whatever works with sincere intent and sincere yearning for what's right. And that, of course, requires open-mindedness. And you don't get any place. I mean, if you're closed mind, you think you have the answers, and then the infinite amount of information you don't have, you close off from yourself. That doesn't seem like a sincere pursuer of what's best or what's true.
It's. I think a lot of it is about expanding our database.
Yeah.
What we draw on. If we're a conventional physician and all we think is what we learned in medical school, that's the truth, and nothing else, everything else, is crap.
Yeah.
That's a real problem.
Right. Really is.
Yeah.
You know, I want to make a point. We have some extraordinary points in this book. Everyone says that it's like a workbook. We give examples of what to do and all kinds of lists. But
It is a workbook. It's not like a workbook.
Yeah,
it is a workbook.
If you walk it and do it, it will really straighten you out. So a thing I want to tell people really important is karma, which is simply, you know, it's so confusing in the world, but karma is simply you reap what you sow. And karma from past lives and everything, or just from wrong thoughts or some of this life, karma has a great deal to do with things. A lot of times people will have gone to psychiatrists, psychologists, and whatnot to get help for certain issues, and they'll finally find me because they're just not getting the thing solved, and we'll go to a piece of their karma or their past life. Let's give an example, okay?
Yes.
I get this quite often. A person had horrendous parents, just horrendous. And they come and they go, it's not fair, I hate my parents. You know, I get them when they're 30, 40, 50, 60, whatever. And they haven't got over the parents. They're just wedged. And so they've been wed for 30, 40, 50, 60 years or whatever, 20 years. And so we're going deeper and deeper. We bring a lot of light in and sort of raises them out of their present consciousness, really in touch with a deeper truth. And all of a sudden we begin to see the past life that and the soul pattern that's off balance in their soul and in their past life or past lives. And I tell them that, and oftentimes they go, yeah, I do a little of that now, yeah, that gets really carried away in me now. And then sometimes we'll see the exact life, and almost like a caricature, like I'm seeing their physical self, but I see this other person superimposed on them, and sometimes they start feeling and thinking and even noticing they think of themselves looking how they did in this past life. Anyhow, we go through the issues of this past life. Let's say a person was really cruel to other people, just didn't listen to them, they were driving them, and they had the power, and they just made a lot of people's lives miserable. And this lifetime, all of a sudden, poor baby, their parents are just, they don't take care of their needs, and they're cruel, and they're mean. And this was their karma that they're... reaping what they sowed in the other lifetime, and this is one of the key ways that our Creator teaches us. And so this is why, you know, you learn and everything, but forgiveness is so valuable because as you forgive your parents for teaching you or treating you this way, you're also forgiving yourself for how you treated other people, and you can get past it. But what I noticed, Dr. Rick, when people actually go through these real clearly is all of a sudden there's no way they can't forgive their parents because they see that whether they had their specific parents, Frank and Jane, or somebody else's parents, they had to have this karma play itself out so that they could experience the other side of what they did, balance the scales, and learn the lessons.
And let's talk just briefly about forgiveness. It seems to me that forgiveness is an act unto ourselves. Forgiveness is not so much about the other person. Forgiveness is more an act within ourselves.
So actually we release ourselves if
yes.
We can muster up a forgiveness.
Yes. And it doesn't mean that forgiving someone doesn't mean that you atone them for what has been done. There are people that I have forgiven in my life that
mm-hmm.
doesn't mean I want them in my life.
Nor does it mean that they are released from what they did themselves. But you, like you say, so wise, you've released them from you being stuck on it.
Yes.
That is so valuable. You don't forgive for them. You forgive for you, and
right.
They're a byproduct.
Right.
And
they benefit also.
Yeah, a lot of times that helps them, but you're the one stuck in that. You're all gristled in. I hate you. I can't get you out of my mind. How could you have ever done that? And, you know, there's millions of people that lose years and years off their lives because they're obsessed with certain unfair, so-called unfair things. But I got to tell you, if you know past lives, and I've gone into past lives thousands and thousands of hours with all kinds of extraordinary experiences, if you know past lives, and you'll begin to realize in this lifetime, everything is fair. Everything is fair. Deal with it. Release yourself. Get it right. Don't hold on to it because it's there to see if you're going to behave and respond in a superior way, a mature way, or if you're going to still keep reacting and being immature and being kicked around by the bottom of the bucket, the dregs at the bottom of the bucket. You don't have to stay there.
Don't hold on to it because people lose not just years, they lose a lifetime.
Yeah.
Holding on because the pain that needs to be forgiven is about release. Releasing what you're holding on to from the past so that it can fall appropriately into the past and not be coloring your present.
Yeah.
Every moment of every day. Oh, if you really need to go visit it sometime, you can still go visit and experience all those emotions.
Mm-hmm. Nice. Yeah, it's like having a boot full of mud, you know. Take the boots off at the door and have a nice life. Don't just keep tromping on in your nice, clean house.
Right.
Hey, I wanted to say something. This seemed to be something that wanted to come into this
show.
You know, there's some people that go, let's make war, this isn't right and everything. And then there's other people, make love, not war. And I just want to say, do right action and find your contribution to make life better. Whether it's love, whether it's war, there's a time and place for everything. There's a time for war when it's appropriate. You know, Rome got so effeminate, so affluent, so indulgent, irresponsible, unrealistic at the end, that it was vulnerable to be taken over, and that's how Rome fell. So they stopped doing wars. They hired somebody else. We really don't want to think of this messy stuff. And I think the United States is getting a lot that way. But making love is a different thing that some people say is the answer. But, you know, making love, a lot of people have too much lust or euphoria or indulgence involved with that. And then there's a time to do that, you know, like... let's say I want to make love, but my wife doesn't, or she does and I don't. I'm not going to override her. That wouldn't be loving. It would be creating negative karma, and she's not going to override me. So we make love when we can. There's certain things that come in our life that we have to fight. If we don't, then we're not being responsible. We're not being appropriately courageous for a worthy cause. Whether it's a war or whether it's somebody trying to take our space, or somebody trying to greedily take from us that isn't appropriate. So it's not make love, not war. It's not war is the solution either. It's right action. War when appropriate, love when appropriate. Hopefully not war ever, but if need be, okay. And right action. So pursue right action. Don't try to get in just one frame of mind and say that's the solution. Of course, war is horrible, and you want to avoid it if you can, but sometimes you can't, or sometimes confronting some issue. Like, let's say somebody is always mean to you, and you want to always try to be nice and be loving and always nice and loving, but sometimes you have to make a stand before the bully will back off.
Absolutely.
And that's just realistic stuff in the world, and so I just wanted to make a point of that. It seemed to want to come into this show. I don't know who's listening, but that kind of thing.
Yeah, I think the right action is a very important concept. I'm not a violent person. I'm not a physical person. There have been times I've moved to being physical.
Yes.
There
yes,
have
sir.
Been circumstances that I have moved to being physical.
Yes.
You know, in a violent way.
Absolutely.
Because it was the right action to take.
Right. So there's right intent and right action, and sometimes right action means you gotta turn pushing to shoving if that's what's appropriate. You know, I know I saw one time this lovely, lovely, sweet lady never would raise her voice, but she was she loved her children, and she was dedicated to taking care of her children more than anything else. She never cussed. She never raised her voice, never a mean thing. So one time one of the kids she was taking care of, she took care of kids. So one time one of these kids got outside the chain link fence, ran out into the street, and this car was coming. These kids, you know, they were just sort of high. Their mind was someplace else, racing down this street where homes are. And the woman ran out, and she screeched, really harsh words, and the unnaturalness of her to the child stopped the child about an inch or two from the car speeding past it. So because she loved the child and was willing to not just stay in nice and sweet, but she cared enough, she went out of character, even hurt her throat a little bit. It stopped the child. The child didn't get hurt. And so she did what was needed to, what seemed like violence at the time, because it sort of shattered everything in earshot, but she saved the child's life.
And if her personality had been such that she was always yelling and screaming about something,
yep,
it might not have had the same effect.
Yeah, they might have gone the same old, same old. She's not worth listening to.
Right.
Yep. And I want to make another point now. This seemed to be for your show, too. Yes and no's are equal. Just because you go yes, 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 nice, 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 doesn't mean that you're right. And right, or truth, is what sets you free and gets things right. And some people are no's, no, that's not right, no, it's not time, or we're not going to do that. So we want to be lubricated, versatile, and being able to say yes when appropriate and no when appropriate. And if you don't know how to do this, folks out there, practice it in your own privacy. Practice different situations where you go, no, that doesn't sound like a good thing. And in our book, Steps to Enlightenment, my wife Charmaine and I wrote this. In our book, we have all kinds of examples of how to say no, even though...
I thought that was very good.
Isn't that fun?
Yes. You listed like 15 different ways to say no in all different ways.
Right.
To help people. If somebody can't think of it right there, you don't even have to think about it. You gave them the examples, because no doesn't mean I don't like you.
That's right.
No doesn't mean I think you're wrong.
Yeah.
It just means no. It just means I'm not willing right now.
Yeah. Other exercises in the book, I just want the audience to hear this before we are off here.
Please. And I want you to give your contact information also.
Yes. Problem solving, how to solve problems, page 44. Priority list, how to prioritize your life. These are really, really valuable, laid right out for you to do. Big, long, clear, concise list of predominant emotion. If you can figure out your predominant emotion, then you can get it balanced and get the other emotions so they get a fair voice when necessary. Red flags, when you hear this, or when this group is doing this, when this person is saying that, what red flags are common in this day and age to be aware of? And another one's omens. You stub your toe, what does that mean? Your knee stiff, what does that mean? You got this headache in this side of your head by your eye, what does that mean? And omens, the rocks, the trees, the world, the fish, the cats, the cars, the motors, everything's talking to you. Everything's reflecting you or reflecting something around you. And if you'll simply take time to it's called micro intelligence, micro mind things, micro mindfulness. You'll begin to read and then take notes and follow through, and you begin to say, wow, we noticed years ago when we moved to Hawaii, this was unusual. Things are quiet all night, and you say something really profound. And this gecko would always yap, yap. You go, yap, 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 yap. And we begin to notice whenever the profound thing once or twice was said per day, one of the geckos would do that. And we moved to different places, and they kept doing that. And so that's one of the powers that geckos do here, at least in our life, is they reverberate when a profoundness that is said that the guide or life itself is trying to say, this is profoundly true, listen closely and follow through. And so that's just one of the omens that we've learned. When the gecko does that after we say something, stop and reconsider what you said and make sure you lock it in, because it has profoundness. And there's millions of omens.
Keith, we're moving into the last minutes of the show. Can you give your contact information, please?
Okay. Let's see. Our book is called Steps to Enlightenment. I'm a healer of 37 years. I do it over the phone. And our email is email is ambers@masteringourselves.com. ambers@masteringourselves.com. Like the resin stone amber, that's our last name, Ambers with a S, @masteringourselves.com. We're here to help. We've been doing it for many years.
And that's your website as well, masteringourselves.com.
Our website's masteringourselves.com. That's right, masteringourselves.com. And that's a good description of us, too, is we're all about mastering ourselves. We don't say mastering yourself. We're part of you, mastering ourselves. That's the name of the game.
Sounds great. We've been talking with Keith Amber and having a nice conversation. It's been a pleasure talking with you, Keith.
You too, Dr. Rick. Thank you very much for having me, and God bless you, all of you out there.
This is Temple of Health Radio Show, brought to you by Millennium Healthcare and Plastico Surgery Center. We're located in Atlanta. You can reach Millennium Healthcare and Plasticos at 770-390-0012, on the web at www.templeofhealth.ws. That's Temple